Welcome to Brian Keane Fitness Podcast, where we talk everything fitness, nutrition, and mindset with your host, Brian Keane.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast, where we talk everything fitness, nutrition, and mindset to help you with your goals. Today's episode is going to be a Friday Q&A, so all the questions sent in came in via my Snapchat, BrianK019. So if you're not following me on my Snapchat, make sure you head over there. All the questions from the podcast come in over there, and I open it up during the week where people can ask me questions back and forth, and I actually do like live Snapchat Q&As. So we'll get cracking straight into this. First question, this is a photo question sent in, so I have no name on it. What food do you think is the most undervalued? It really is context dependent on each person's diet, because what's going to be undervalued for you is normally whatever nutrient or mineral that you're going to be lacking from the foods that you eat. So for example, if you're a vegan or vegetarian, there's a chance that you may be deficient in, say, amino acids, because you may be not eating enough food combinations to get all your aminos. If, for example, you don't eat any red meat, and you just eat chicken and turkey, you may be a bit lax in, say, creatine, which would effectively become undervalued because your body wouldn't have enough creatine if you were trying to build muscle. But I think the general rule that I see with people, two things. One is a green supplement or actual greens like broccoli, kale, spinach, people not eating enough veg. Really, green veg particularly is so loaded with vitamins and minerals and nutrients that it's incredible for your body. It's one of the best ways to get those vitamins and minerals. Like, you can take a supplement, but the reality is nothing's going to beat eating the real food. And what I generally see with people, and I get a lot of Snapchat Q&As where people are like, I don't like my veg, what can I have instead? And I normally recommend a good green drink or a good green supplement, but the reality is nothing beats having the real thing. The next thing that I advise that's probably undervalued is people not eating enough real food. I generally find that people not even go towards processed food and like microwavable versions, but they're eating food that isn't the best source. So normally the mistakes I see with people is eating eggs that are just normal, cheap, store-bought eggs, when if you paid an extra €2 or €3, you could get some free-range organic ones would actually have a higher level of omega-3, so it would actually speed up your fat loss and actually give you all the benefits of your heart health that you need from your omega-3. Eggs get a really bad rap because of, say, saturated fat, and people say the saturated fat is linked to cholesterol. There's been arguments and studies proving that that's not a case, that there's actually no link direct, but you can avoid this completely by spending an extra couple of euro, or an extra couple of pounds, or an extra couple of dollars, and getting yourself some free-range and organic eggs. You can tell by looking at the yolk. If you've got like a yellow yolk, it's a sign of a really poor quality chicken that made that egg. So you're getting all the shit, all the grains and shit they ate, the environment they lived in, which where they haven't been able to move around, their body's been constantly stressed and elevated cortisol. You're getting that egg. Like, when they say you are what you eat, it's so true in terms of what your food ate and how your food lived is going into your body. And then the reverse happens for free-range and organic eggs, because they were obviously out in the fields, they had more space, they were fed normally better foods, they haven't been filled with antibiotics and hormones. You generally tend to get all the benefits, like the omega-3 tends to be higher in those kind of eggs. So I generally find that people sourcing their food for the sake of an extra €2 or €3, that's where I would really think that people undervalue it. The same with, you know, with organic broccoli or spinach. It's an extra 50 cent and it hasn't been sprayed with pesticides and different preservatives that are added to it. Like, the reality is that pesticide that's getting sprayed on your vegetables is going into your body. Then if your body has to deal with the pesticide, can you imagine it prioritizing losing body fat or building muscle if it's got pesticides and different things inside of you that your body has to deal with first? It's not going to prioritize building muscle or losing body fat. So the less jobs you give your body, the more efficient it's going to be at doing what you want it to do, you know, improve as an athlete, lose body fat, drop it a couple of dress sizes, build more muscle. So there's a way to kind of hijack that, and that's why choosing good quality foods. So to give you two answers on that, choosing a good quality food, you know, with your eggs, with your meat, with your chicken, with your veg, and then green veg is probably the most undervalued that I find with people. But that's generic. Some people eat loads. I'm just kind of going by like Pareto 80-20 principle that 80% of the people I talk to don't eat enough green veg or enough vitamins and minerals from that. Question two, from Shan Kennedy. Have you worked with people with eating disorders? Yes, I've worked with a lot of people with eating disorders. It's funny because as someone that's been in the middle of the fitness industry, eating disorders are a lot more common than you think. And what happens where eating disorders are hidden is that people have them, they've got body dysmorphia and they're hidden behind a six-pack of abs or a flat stomach or amazing glutes. Still eating disorders to some degree with some people. And I'm not saying everybody on Facebook or Instagram with abs and amazing glutes has an eating disorder. That's ridiculous. There's some amazing people that are perfectly happy with their bodies and just happen to be in amazing shape. But largely I found as somebody that's been in the middle of the fitness industry, and I've literally been smack bang in the middle of it. I've had the sponsorships. I've finished eighth in the world in the Las Vegas show. I've been in the middle with people that have 3, 4, you know, some of 10 million followers. And I'm seeing them, and some of these people have horrible, horrible eating disorders. So I've seen it at the high end of fitness where people are competitively competing at the top level and they've got eating disorders. And I've seen it with people that are, you know, regular people on the street that are looking on Instagram, looking on Facebook, and their eating disorder gets worse when they see these people, not realizing that they're just an upskilled version of where they're at. And I've worked with people from all areas. I've gone with people that have come off the back of shows and photo shoots and who are no longer competing, that recognized they had an eating disorder. I recognized myself that I had really bad issues and a really bad relationship with food. It's why I'm so not anti-competitor or anti-fitness industry in any way, but I'm telling people to watch out that it's a very, very slippery slope that leads to things like starvation diets, people going to drugs, people do appetite suppressants and all of these things just trying to look a certain way. And it doesn't matter what scale that's at, whether that's the beginner that's looking in the magazines or looking on Instagram or looking on Facebook and feels bad about themselves, to the person that's finishing, you know, top three in the world of fitness models or bikini girls. But I've worked with people on all levels. I have people in my online program that have came back from eating disorders or are on the way or trying to actively fix it. It's an area I'm very, very strong in because it's a place I struggled with. So I know firsthand how to come at it in terms of how to deal with it. It's very, very different with each person. Normally finding the why, what's stimming it, normally helps. And then cutting out things that are going to mess up your body hormonally. The general rule is like the more balanced your estrogen, the more balanced your testosterone, the more balanced your cortisol, the more balanced all of your hormones are, at least your body will be in a good homeostatic state. So the decisions you're making and the way you see yourself is coming from a better place as opposed to somebody whose hormones are completely out of whack. After that, then it's about finding the why, what's causing it. For me, it was a case of body dysmorphia forming from judges looking at me and realizing that I need to be better, I need to be bigger, I need to be more ripped, I need to be leaner. And I understood that's where it was coming from. So I'm a cut the source, fix the problem kind of person. So I stopped competing. Not to say that I won't ever compete again, but I'll never compete again for a judge's opinion. It will be down because I want to look a certain way and I happen to be ready for a show by the lifestyle that I live, and I end up doing it. But I'll never prep for a show again, and I'll never keep a judge's consideration or opinion, let it take control of my life ever again. So really it depends on the person. Everyone's case is very, very different. But I've worked with lots of people in that field. It'll be a pretty strong area because it's quite close to my heart. Question from B. Gaffney 99. How often should I change my training program? This one varies. It really, really depends on the program you're following. I generally recommend if you're just following a set program, change it up every 6 weeks so you get a bit of muscle confusion and your body doesn't get used to it. For example, in my online program, I actually switch it up every 2 weeks. I add in finishers on the third week and then again on the sixth week, and then the phase two is a completely different program. So I try and switch it up a little bit more regularly. I generally find after about 3 weeks, your body is starting to get used to a program. So unless you're starting to progressively overload or increasing your tension or your time under tension on each exercise so that there's something switched, or rest periods are lower where there's an actual parameter switched in the workout, I generally find you start to stagnate around the 3 week mark, around 3-4 weeks. That's why I actually added in on week 3. So it kind of beats people to it, to let your metabolism never stalls. It works both ways. So the finishers will come in and elevate your metabolism so that you can actually burn more body fat, or it'll elevate fiber tears, so that if you're in a massive calorie surplus, you'll actually be able to build more muscle and it'll work as muscle confusion, so your body doesn't get used to anything. But the general rule of thumb, and you'll read it in most places, around 6 weeks. I wouldn't recommend doing any more than 6 weeks unless you're progressively overloading, where you're actually adding a little bit of weight, or you're decreasing the rest slightly, or you're increasing the tension, or you're changing something from the program so that your body's not doing the exact same thing every day. If you're doing the same workout in the same weight with the same rest and the same tempo as you were doing in week one and you're doing in week six, your body's going to get used to that. So growth and change comes from resistance. So you need to change up a parameter so that your body's under constant resistance on that. Question from Lee96. Is it only possible to lose body fat in a calorie deficit? Two answers to this. One, from the most basic scientific point of view, technically, yes. Your body needs to be in a calorie deficit. Any magazine you read or any article you will read, 95% of the studies will support that you need to be in a calorie deficit to lose body fat. And that's true. And it's the easiest and simplest way to do it. I'm not going to lie. If your maintenance calories is 2,000 and you start eating 1,500, you're going to lose body fat. You're probably going to lose weight depending on your actual like body structure, but you'll definitely lose body fat if you're eating a calorie deficit. It's calories in, calories out, and it's basic science and it works. Is it the only way? No. I have found that I've worked with clients, and I'm a good example of this because this is how I follow my lifestyle in general, but particularly people I work with. I have had clients and people in my online programs lose weight in a calorie surplus or around their maintenance, but they're getting their deficit from training. That's actually my favorite way to lose body fat, because if, for example, your maintenance calories is 2,000, like I said, for example, I would prefer to have you eating 2,000 calories per day and getting your deficit from training and then doing different methods to get your deficit in. So if you're doing a tension style training program, you're going to be tearing more fibers, which is going to elevate your metabolism during the week. So you're actually going to get a spike in metabolism all through the week from your training. If you're focusing your cardio a certain way and elevating your heart rate at the end of sessions, you're going to burn more body fat as well. And you're actually going to drop into a deficit that way. Not only that, but you get to eat more food. Food is going to keep you, obviously, your blood sugar stable. It's going to keep you more satiated. So it means you're not going to be reaching for sugary foods and reaching for foods that don't support your goals because you're hungry. And also, it doesn't affect hormones. When you drop calories too low, things like your leptin, your ghrelin, your hunger, your satiating hormones tend to get completely out of balance. It's why people on starvation diets and crash diets and fatty diets can upset their ghrelin and leptin hormones, because they've dropped their calories way too low. In all the years I've worked with people, I've never dropped anybody below 1,000 calories. And I've worked with, you know, girls who are 4'11", you know, 40, 50 kilos, and I've never dropped them below 1,000. There's no need when you've got your training program and your nutrition on point. So to answer your question, the easiest way is to lose body fat is to get into a calorie deficit. It doesn't take too much thought because you just eat less calories than you need to take in. Is it the most optimal way? In my opinion, no. It's not sustainable long term. Your energy levels will be affected. Your mood will drop. Your training will eventually drop. And what generally happens with people, and you, anyone that's ever done a crash diet or a fad diet or dropped their calories too low, and I've worked with so many people who have done this, will tell you and attest to, is you'll stagnate. You'll lose the body fat initially and then your body will just stop. What happens is it's your body, your actual homeostatic state, your body fat levels are like a thermometer. You know, it's where if you reset your thermometer down and your body's now eating 1,500 calories, it gets used to eating 1,500 calories and stops burning body fat because it no longer thinks it's in a deficit. So it's not the most optimal way. For me, I've always found keeping calories slightly higher around the maintenance or 100 above or below, and then getting it from training and doing the right style, tension style training, the right style of cardio and the right program in general tends to help massively, and it keeps hormones at optimal levels. So everything's functioning better, you have more energy, and you're continuously losing body fat. So question from Anya, do you ever regret going into bodybuilding? No, I have, without sounding like a cheesy dick, I have nothing in my life I regret. Everything that I've done, and I've done some fucking bad shit that I wish I hadn't, and looking back, I'm like, what were you doing? But the reality is, it's all molded me to who I am today. I would not be the person I am. I wouldn't have the drive, the discipline, all the character traits that I like within myself had it not been for the trials and tribulations that I've gone through. And bodybuilding gave me so much. And even though it sounds like I hate on competitive world and I hate on that side of things at times, because it takes so much without giving a lot back. And when I see people devoting their entire lives to competition and competing and things like that, and letting their families go, you know, to second place, and letting their friends go to second place, their jobs go to second place, things that are more important than how you look for 3 minutes on a stage, that's what gets me very, makes me feel that bodybuilding isn't the most optimal way for everybody to live their life. But I have no regrets. I loved my journey. The reality is, everything I have now, the clarity, even though I had to do and use and take and be a certain person that I didn't want to be in terms to try and make it. Like, I finished eighth in the world in the Las Vegas show. I won a pro card, which is kind of topping out in terms of competitive fitness and bodybuilding. But it would left me hollow. The reality is, it wasn't like I was doing stuff to my health that wasn't going to help me. I was training 4 hours a day. I was doing cardio in the morning. I was doing starvation diets. I was using fat burners and appetite suppressants and every sort of shit that would get my body ready for stage. And it was a terrible way to live. Looking back, I felt clouded in my head. I didn't feel like me anymore, even though I looked, you know, quote unquote amazing for a competitive athlete. I was, you know, 4, 5, 6% body fat walking around, and then on stage, you know, you were full and lean and ripped. But it was so hollow that it wasn't my path. But the reality is, it set me on the path I'm on now. The discipline I got, like, you know, I get up every morning at 5:30. I do my podcast, my videos, my blogs, reply to emails, talk to people, do everything I have, my online programs. That discipline started from bodybuilding, because I used to get up at 5 or 5:30 to do cardio because it was the only time in the day I could do it. So a lot of the disciplines from competitive bodybuilding and that cross over into other aspects of life. That, I think, is incredible. And I think if you can take the best from bodybuilding and the lifestyle and the discipline and all the great stuff that comes with it, I think it make you such a stronger version of yourself. In terms of regretting it, no, definitely not. I wouldn't change it for anything. The reality is, I went down that path and I completely changed direction 18 months ago. Anyone following me 18 months ago, you will see that I'm a very, very different person now. My girl was born, my whole life changed. You know, Holly became my why. I stopped being such a selfish wanker, and I stopped abusing my body, for the lack of a better way of putting it, and started to realize that I need to be around in, you know, 30, 40 years. I need to be here for my little girl. I need to be present and be here in mind and body for my little girl, and not be spaced out because I'm worried about a show I've got in 6 weeks, and lying on a couch and can't play with her because I have no energy. So my why changed, and that's one of the reasons I stepped away from it. But I don't have any regrets. Okay, best exercise to look like Conor McGregor naked. Okay, good old Conor. Conor's killing it at the minute. I'm a fan. I don't follow the UFC, but I like anyone that can excel that high on their sport. I think it's just incredible, because the discipline it takes is amazing. In terms of to look good naked, I've actually seen his training program. He does a lot of metabolic conditioning style workouts, which makes sense, as you would as a UFC fighter. I actually have a version of my online program, or my lean body program, that has a version of this. A lot of the GEA lean body program principles are based out of this, the metabolic conditioning. His is just a higher end version of that. He obviously doesn't do the hypertrophy work, and he wouldn't do that much strength and conditioning. It's a lot of metabolic conditioning. So things like, yeah, using battle ropes in his training, tires, kettlebells, plyometrics. He does a lot of that kind of work to failure. So what I would do is try and design a program. It obviously nail your nutrition. Like, it's really important to get everything right in that aspect. But in terms of exercises, you're asking me, it's going to be a lot of metabolic conditioning style work. So battle ropes, different variations of battle ropes, waves, battle rope burpees, using kettlebells, swings, clean and presses, using plyometrics, box jumps, burpee box jumps, some body weight movements I've seen him in there, like spider crawls, spider walks. I've actually taken, there's 3 or 4 moves in my GA lean body program in one of the versions that I literally took straight from McGregor's training program, because I adapted it for myself, and I was like, oh my God, this is incredible. And I literally put it directly into the program. So that's the kind of training I would do. It's not the exercises as such, as opposed to the systems and style. You'd obviously have your compounds in there, barbell, box squat, things like that are all going to support growth and explosiveness, but the main system is going to be metabolic conditioning. So a higher heart rate, working to failure, but getting your heart rate at 80-90% with resistance and loading your weight and working in that kind of aerobic slash anaerobic zone to failure. So that's all the questions. I want to say a massive thank you to everybody that sent in all the questions this week. If you're not on my Snapchat, BrianK019, make sure to follow me on there, because most of these Friday Q&As, all the questions actually come in from Snapchat. So if you're following me on there, I open it up and you can send me in any podcast questions, but I open it up every day for questions back and forth for just live Q&As on Snapchat as well. And for any more information on me, you can check out my blog on www.briankeenfitness.com. You can subscribe to my newsletter on the website. For my social media, Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram is all Brian Keen Fitness. And as I said, my Snapchat is BrianK019. That's probably the one I'm the most active on at the moment. It's my favorite platform because it's the most interactive. It's the only one that I can instantly talk to people back and forth. So I love it so much at the minute. And a massive thank you to Cullum at Doxonic for putting together the podcast episode. Anyone looking to get their podcast set up, definitely recommend getting on to Cullum at Doxonic. Thanks, guys. Have a killer week, and I'll catch you soon.